Hi there. You're listening to the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse, and I'm your hostess, Heather Wayman.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to episode 68 of the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse. I am Heather Wayman, director at Belly Dance Geek, and I want to let you know, and everybody that's listening now and later, that if you have a product or a service or an event that you'd like to promote, consider sponsoring the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse and reaching over 1,500 enthusiastic and engaged belly dance geeks. You can find information about sponsoring the clubhouse at bellydancegeek.com/sponsor. And just a little bit about the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse, if you're not real familiar with it. The clubhouse is a place where dancers can get together and geek out on all those things that are hard to get in classes and on DVDs. If you want help with the what, things like moves, combos, and choreography, there are a lot of resources out there for you. But if you need help with the why and the how, stuff like musicality, culture, business, ethics, and composition, that can be a lot harder to find. So every month we interview a different guest expert on different geeky topics, and we always have time for question and answers so you can geek out too. So if you think that knowledge and creativity go together like chocolate and peanut butter, or in my opinion, chocolate and red wine, you are in a spot. My guest today is Vanessa of Cairo. I'm super excited. Vanessa has been living and dancing full-time in Egypt since 2008. Currently residing in Cairo, Vanessa has held contracts in five-star hotels, notably the Sofitel El Gazira, where she has performed weekly for the past several years. In addition to hotel shows, events, and cabaret performances, Vanessa has recently performed as a soloist and started acting roles in plays and productions in several theaters, including the famous Balloon Theater, where the Rita Troupe and the Kalmea Troupe rehearse and perform. Vanessa is an on-staff master teacher at Nile Group Festival in Cairo. She currently is teaching private and group workshops in a wide variety of styles, for example, rock sharky and many of the Egyptian folklore dances in Cairo and internationally. Previously based for 6 years in Sharm el-Sheikh, one of Egypt's most prized tourist destinations, Vanessa is the first American woman to create, own, and operate a production company in Egypt. While in Sharm, Vanessa held contracts at the Four Seasons, Hyatt, Marriott, Sonesta, Hilton, Tropicana, Mövenpick, Concord, and Stella de Mar, to name a few. Vanessa holds a Bachelor's of Fine Arts degree in ballet from Texas Christian University. Woo-hoo, go Tex! Bringing the element of her classical dance training to whatever style she is teaching, Vanessa helps her students reach a higher level of excellence. For more information about Vanessa, please visit her website at vanessarocks.com. That's rocks with a Q. Welcome, Vanessa.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you, Heather, for inviting me. And thank you, everybody who's on right now. I'm thrilled to be sharing this time with you.
It is a pleasure to have you with us. I would like to start off, as we do with every guest, and have you tell us a little bit about your story and help us get to know you a little bit. How'd you get started with belly dance?
Yeah, well, the first time I ever saw a belly dance performance, kind of funny. I'm from Texas, so I grew up in Texas, and I was at a Renaissance fair called Scarborough Fair, and it was really the last thing I was expecting to see. I must have been maybe around 16, and I was just there, you know, having fun, and all of a sudden I hear some drums, and a bunch of people are gathering around, and I'm like, oh, what's this? And I was pretty much hooked, and I became like a stalker of the shows that whole season. Like, I had season passes, and I think I just went from one show to the next, like back and forth all day. That's all I did. I was like, you guys can go get a turkey leg. I'm going to see the dance show. And I just felt like, I was like, man, I was already doing ballet and jazz and musical theater and other forms of dancing, you know, from the time I was very young. And I always loved dance, but I just felt like it was something I had to learn how to do. And so actually, it's really cool. There were two groups there, and one of the groups was Mia Bella and her partner, Luisa, who have Crescent Moon Belly Dance Studio in Fort Worth, and she became my teacher. And I still do events with her and stuff like that. You know, it's wonderful. And then the other group was Isis and the Star Dancers. And I think she's in Hearst. Anyway, she does Yahala Y'all every year. And so it's really cool that these two teachers that were there doing these performances are a big part of the dance community in Texas and have continued to have many students pass through the doors. And, you know, and I know them both and, you know, just enjoy the stuff that they do. So that's how I got started. That was the very, very beginning. And after a couple years, I started to get some gigs in the Dallas-Fort Worth area while I was in college at TCU, when I was in the dance program there, and just got some work experience. And then I moved to New York after I graduated and had the opportunity there to really learn a lot and get a lot of experience dancing with live. It was the first time I really had to dance with live band, because there, back then, they still did that. It was still at least a keyboard and a drummer. And, you know, I mean, there was at least a few guys usually playing. And so I got a really good chance to work with live music every weekend. And then it went from there. But I mean, the beginning was in Texas, and then I got about 8 years of experience dancing with live Egyptian music in New York City.
Wow, that's fantastic. So you started your live music dance in Texas, right? Did you have much opportunity to dance with live music while you were in Texas before you got to New York, or was that, how did that work?
Yeah, no, not so much at that time. I mean, well, it's kind of funny because when I started, we were still, it was like the mid to late, it was like the mid-ish 90s. So I do remember making mixtapes. And if any of you remember, like, you know, you pause on the, you know, the double tape deck, and then you're like, okay, now I want this song. And I mean, it was crazy. But no, I mean, back then it was kind of like there weren't big festivals and events like there are now. I mean, there would be hoflas. And I mean, if you got invited, you were getting... you were on the mailing list. Like, you were literally getting like letters in the mail telling you about these events. This was back in the day, you know, I mean, I didn't even have an email address back then. So it was one of those things where I really did not have the opportunity to dance with live music. It was really in New York when it happened. So I think in Texas, it was pretty much Lebanese nightclubs and restaurants. Everything we did was with a CD or a DJ. And that was, I think that was about it.
Wow. Okay. So when you went to New York and you started dancing with the live bands and the clubs, how did you get an in there? And was it super, super scary?
Yeah, I'll tell you something. You know, I kind of always had, I kind of always had balls. I mean, that's really the truth. It really is. I don't know. I moved to New York really not knowing hardly anybody. I had like one friend who's a musical theater friend that was there. But otherwise, I didn't know anyone. And what I did is I literally got in the phone book and started finding Middle Eastern restaurants. I did not have anybody helping me in that moment. I had just heard of a couple places, and I called this one place called Cedars of Lebanon. And there was a lady named Amal there who was like the keeper of the keys. I mean, she was like, if you don't get through her, you're not going to be working there. So basically I called and I was like, hi, my name is Vanessa. I'm from Texas. I'm moving to New York. I'd love to make an audition. I mean, she was like, who is this girl? You know? So I mean, she was probably like, this is so weird. Like, what is this? So, you know, I set up an audition with her, and there I was, like, literally fresh off the boat, straight from Texas with like bad highlights and a bob. And, you know, I was real tan and my purse matched my shoes and, you know, straight from Texas. And, you know, she was probably just like, what is this? But, you know, I did the audition and I had a bob. So my hair was a little bit shorter, you know, it's kind of Betty Boop-ish. And, and she's like, you know, usually, and she was Lebanese, so she had an accent and everything, but she's like, usually, you know, I would make you wear a wig. She's like, but this is cute. It suits you. You could keep it. You could dance with your hair like that. You remind me of my cousin.
Okay.
And yeah, and she's like, you've got Tuesdays. Like, they had dancing there, like, every night of the week back then. She's like, you've got Tuesdays. And if you want to do the weekend show, like, it's like, it was like a choreographed program with the other ladies, you could get with them and rehearse, and you can, you know, become part of the, like, the rotation of the girls that dance on the weekend. Well, I ended up getting a job at the Chanel boutique in high-end retail in the same moment. So I really actually couldn't commit to the weekends and other practice times because I had this job. So I was able to do Tuesday nights, but I was able to meet some of these ladies. And through that, through meeting the ladies, I met a couple of them. And one of them, Yasmin, she was working and doing booking in some of the places. And her husband at the time was a keyboardist. And he was working at places. So I got some gigs in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, and some other places through them. And it was through Yasmin that I met Gamila El Masri, who became my mentor later. So it was really interesting how one thing kind of led to the next. But if I had never called them all at Cedars Lebanon, I never would have met Rehana and Yasmin and some of these other ladies that, you know, gave me gigs and that were very kind and very nice to me and introduced me to the community and made me feel welcome. And then meeting through their events, then finally meeting Gamila, who's the one who kind of, you know, kicked my butt and got me in line and said, you know, handed me the Mahmoud Reda VHS tape and said, yeah, you're okay. You've got a few more things to learn though. Watch this and learn because I see that you've got the, you know, she really was, I mean, you know, with, she told me all the things I needed to hear. It wasn't, oh, that's nice, honey. She's like, yeah, you're good enough. Yeah, you're good. Sometimes I don't think you're really doing our dance, but, you know, you're working and it's okay. She's like, but you could do more. And she goes, and I see in you the capability and the possibilities for more. And I want you to be able to do those things. And she handed me that VHS tape that was really worn and, you know, with the squiggly lines, like you can hardly see, you can't even hardly make everything out. But, you know, with Farida Fahmi and Mahmoud Reda and the real, you know, the, like the original gang, you know, and
right.
I started to learn some of this stuff. And, you know, and I really feel that if it hadn't been for her, I probably would not have gone in the direction that I had gone. And I probably would not have been able to learn a lot of the rhythms and learn a lot of the different folklore dances. And I don't think I would have been able to be successful in Egypt without that training and without that background and without that context. You know, I think that I was led to her, and she saw something in me, and finally, I mean, I know I was very stubborn in the beginning, but at least I finally did listen to some of the things she had to say, and it all worked out, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a journey. But dancing to live music, I mean, I remember it was like, Yala, you know, just go, just follow, just do this. And I was like, but you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure I kind of sucked, you know, but I was young and I was cute and, you know, and I caught on quickly. You know, I remember, you know, they did a certain program that kind of went in a certain order and the next week I was better and I started to learn the entrance pieces. And I think most of the time they played Cecil Hawson or Princess of Cairo or something. And those were pretty catchy. I mean, I'm pretty good with music. So I would just remember what he did. And each time I would just be like, okay, ooh, I got this one. Ooh, I got that change. Oh, I was ready for that, you know? And that's kind of how it was. I really learned on the job. I learned as it was happening through osmosis. And I feel that you can take all the courses you want on live music, but until you get that experience, you know, it's, there's a difference between the practice and the rehearsal and the actual performance and when it's happening.
Exactly.
And, you know, we've all been there. We've all been like, I've danced to that song 100 times. Why? When the band was playing, all of a sudden I just froze up or I didn't know what the heck was going on. You just kind of have to roll with it.
Yeah. And, well, because when you do live music, the band plays it differently every single time.
And that's why you got to get ready for anything. And I learned that without being too scared because I just got thrown into it. So finally I was like, well, hey, you know, this is just how it goes. And I wouldn't beat myself up if I missed a little something. I'd be like, oh, I'll get it next time. Or, oh, okay, this is going to repeat. I'll catch it then. And, you know, I just kind of had a very sort of, you know, it's the people want to enjoy themselves. They're there to have a good time. They're not there to watch you hit every single accent.
Exactly.
You know, so I just kind of got to where I was like, you know, let's, let's have an overall good show. You know, let me have an overall, you know, if the people are happy, if they're singing along, if they're, you know, getting up and, you know, of course, if they're getting up and throwing money, that's lovely. But, you know, just let's let everybody have a good time and say, hey, we want her back. We liked her, you know, and that's, to me, that was the goal. Just, you know, get through it without falling down.
Yeah, or having a costume malfunction.
Yeah, right. Try not to, you know, make sure you're wearing shorts. And that was kind of how it all started in New York. And it's invaluable experience, I must say, invaluable.
Yeah. You mentioned networking.
I didn't mean to cut you off. I was just going to say, I'm actually very sad that there aren't so many venues now that are having the live music opportunities. Some of them are, but usually it's like for the singers, and then, you know, they'll let the dancer dance to CD in the break. And it really kind of breaks my heart, because I think there's a lot of dancers out there that aren't getting these opportunities. And it makes me sad. Maybe the places are trying to save money, or maybe there aren't musicians that are really interested, or maybe they're doing weddings and stuff. But it is something that I really cherish, the fact that I had the opportunity to do that every week, because I don't know how much of that exists everywhere now.
Yeah, it's definitely, I wasn't on the scene back in the 80s and even the 90s, but I have heard many, many times about how many more clubs there were and how much more live music there was. And there is a much shorter supply of that now. So anytime anybody gets an opportunity to dance to live music, it's golden, you know?
Well, you know, and this is not, I'm not sitting here trying to advertise, but if people are interested in live music programs, if they want to kind of have that experience and come to Egypt, there's a couple of live music programs which are happening that I will be involved in the next year. One of them is with Kitty Sharif, and it's the Musical Heart of Egypt, and that's happening in October of this year. I believe it's like the 6th through 10th or something like that.
Yeah.
I'll be teaching a rhythms workshop, but Nesreen, who's a soloist at the Rada Troupe, she'll be teaching Saidi. Nora, who's this amazing singer, she does Kalthoum repertoire. She's going to be singing. There's going to be live orchestra, and basically the entire intensive is all with live music.
That's
so it's
awesome.
Incredible.
Yeah, I've been seeing those advertisements.
Yes, and Kitty is amazing, and she, you know, she danced in Egypt, and she's just a wonderful, you know, just really all about the, you know, just promoting the good things that this dance has to offer. So that's in October, and then the following in 2020, I'm also going to be teaching in Luxembourg at another live music intensive, which is Simone and Tina, one lady from Italy and another from Germany. They're organizing this event, and I'm super thrilled to be teaching there. And then one of the days they're going to do a class with Kyria, who's the last Gawazi, and she's in Luxor, Kyria Mazin. And there's going to be a Saidi class with a male folklore dancer. And so it's going to be amazing. And that is in the beginning of April 2020, I think around the 4th through the 10th or something like that.
Okay, I want to get that information from you so I can put that as on the resources on the episode page.
Sure.
And I'll put Kitty's program up there also.
Absolutely, but really, if people are wanting to have that chance to really delve into it and have the opportunity to work with the live music and to just go step by step, and each day you just kind of feel it like seeping into you a little bit more and more, and then it's an incredible feeling because you're in Egypt already. So you just get to submerge yourself in the whole environment and experience. And I highly recommend for anybody that can take the time off to do it. It's an amazing investment for you, for your students, and, you know, and for your audience if you're performing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So getting back to, you mentioned networking, and, I agree. That is such an important thing, because if you can go somewhere and, you know, be involved in a festival or a competition or whatever, and it doesn't matter if it's a competition, if you win or, you know, whatever. But you are meeting people are seeing you dance. And just like in your case, Vanessa, you never know where it's going to lead, right?
Exactly. I mean, I feel like everything does lead to the next thing. And sometimes we don't see our progress, or we feel like we're in a rut, or we're just doing the same thing. But every step you take is a step closer to where you're supposed to be. And sometimes it's a detour. You know, sometimes you feel like, oh, it's not happening. Why? I mean, I remember when I was, this had to have been about 15 years ago. I was still in New York. It was before I went to Egypt, and I felt very discouraged because I felt like, what the heck am I doing? I'm just doing the same thing. I feel like a hamster on the wheel, but people aren't taking me seriously yet for teaching, even though I've got experience. It's just, it just wasn't the right time for that. And I felt very stuck. And you know who gave me great advice in regards to that was Aziza of Montreal, Mandy Aziza Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Aziza was just like, you know, you may not like it, but, you know, it might be good for you to do some competitions because it'll get you out there, or to just attend a lot of these workshops and perform in the gala show, you know, if you don't want to do the competitions. But be there, get seen, meet people, and, you know, and start to just, it was like, you need to start networking. You need to get yourself out there and meet the people. And it was really good advice because you can be in your bubble and that's where you're going to stay.
That's right.
And so she said, you know, you may not like competitions. I did a couple competitions, and I'll tell you, I won fourth place 2 times. But like half a point or 1 point.
Oh, yeah.
I'll tell you. Yeah, Dr. Mo Gaddawi, I remember one time crying, and he goes, you're a good dancer. He goes, but, you know, that's not the point. You know, sometimes people win, they're not supposed to win, or sometimes people win, we're even surprised at the outcome. He's like, the main point is that you get up there, you do a good job, you do your best, you learn something, you work hard, and you walk away with an experience.
Yes.
But he's like, you know, it's not about the winning. And I realized, you know, he was right. I think competitions can be very good tools to help push you to have goals and to, you know, get the stamina to work hard, to train, to, you know, if you're shy, to just, you know, work up the nerve to get up there and perform in front of people and get feedback and know that sometimes you're not going to like that feedback that you're going to get. And you have to be ready for that. If you're very, very sensitive, don't do a competition. You know, it's not, I wouldn't recommend it. Like, you have to know. Now, see, for me, I was already going to auditions, which is already like a competition in New York City for Broadway and off-Broadway and national tours. I mean, there's 300 girls and they're going to pick two, and chances are it's not you. So I got a whole lot of, I got told, you know, thank you a whole lot of times. I was used to that. I mean, I was used to, you know, not always winning, not always getting the part. But if you keep auditioning, you're going to get the work eventually. You know, if you keep going, you're eventually going to, you know, get something that's right for you. So, you know,
yeah.
it was for me, it wasn't, but I do remember, like, I was crying. I was in the lobby and I was feeling badly about it. He's like, you're a good dancer. Like, why are you upset? You did a good job. Like, he's like, he was like, it was a very small, you know, it was just like 1 or 2 points. He's like, don't worry about it. And then I moved on.
Yeah. It's a growing experience, no matter what
Absolutely.
Happens.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And now when I evaluate, you know, competitions and I remember these things, because sometimes you have somebody and they've really got spirit, you know, but they may not have such great technique, or this one really has a wonderful look and a fantastic personality, but, you know, she's not quite with the music. I mean, there's always something, but I look at the overall thing and I think, you know, we're all so different. It's so hard to judge. How can you compare apples and oranges?
Yeah, it's very subjective.
Mm-hmm. It is, absolutely. But mm-hmm. the networking is so important, because at the end of the day, people aren't always going to remember who won or who lost, but they're going to remember who made an impression, mm-hmm. and they're going to remember who was nice, and they're going to remember who was genuine, and they're going to remember who made them smile the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, and they're going to remember who was gracious, and they're going to remember who made them feel like they were in another place. Hey, she took me to another place. You know, I mean, that's what it's about, isn't it?
Yeah, being transported. Yeah.
So, yeah, the networking is super important.
Yeah. So you mentioned Gamila, and it's my understanding that she is is also a teacher of yours?
Oh, yeah. So she, oh my goodness. I mean, to tell you the history of Gamila would be like a whole nother interview.
Is that how you got to Egypt? I was kind of following up to I was segueing into that. How you got there,
okay.
Yeah?
Well, how I got there was I was encouraged by Dr. Mo Gaddawi to go to visit Egypt. Gamila had always been encouraging me, and so she was more like my coach. By the time I got to New York, I was already working professionally, and I had already gotten my basic training. But I did take classes with her, and I learned a lot about nuance and Egyptian style specifically, and Egyptian folklore, many, many things. But basically getting to Egypt, Dr. Mo Gaddawi, who was one of the judges and one of the, you know, he's the one that said, don't worry about if you want or not. He was like, you know, you of all people, if you really love this dance and you, you know, are working in this field, you need to go to visit Egypt. You need to go. Well, he wasn't saying you need to go there to work. He was just saying, absorb the culture, learn about it, know what you're doing, you know, just have that experience for yourself. It's going to do a lot for your dancing. It's going to give you some context, the better reference point. So he encouraged me to go. And then I had just some people that I worked for in New York that thought, hey, you know, yeah, you'd probably be able to be successful in Egypt if you tried. You know, you've got a good personality. Your dancing is good. You know, I mean, it wasn't like, oh my God, you're going to be a star. You know, it wasn't like that. It was, I'd make you a star. You know, no, it wasn't like this. It was really very much like, hey, you know, you're doing really well here. The people really like you. You've got a great way about you. You could probably be successful in Egypt. So my whole thing was, okay, I'm going to go there. I'm going to see what happens. I got a 6-month open-ended ticket. And, you know, even Gamila was not even wondering. Like, she was like, she didn't know if I was going to be turning back around in 2 weeks or 1 month or 2 months later. She had no idea, you know, but she was very, very, very supportive. And, you know, I basically got a sub letter and packed 2 suitcases and went to Cairo, and I went there for the Nile Group Festival. I was a participant there, took workshops. And the cool thing is I had already taken workshops with a lot of these teachers. Mahmoud Reda was still there. Hassan Afifi was there. Farida Fahmi was there. And Aida Noor, in that moment, she was still with them. So all of these wonderful, great teachers, all of them I knew. All of them recognized me from years before in classes in New York and other places all over the States. So I felt, at least, like when I was in class and I was in that first couple weeks in Egypt, I was like, well, at least, you know, I felt like not like a complete stranger. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, I had moved already to New York on my own. I was like just in Egypt figuring out, like, you know, how it's going to go. So basically what happened at Nile Group is I got invited by one of the teachers, Ihab Ateya, who I believe he is based now in Germany. He was doing this really fun, kind of funky, modern jazz type oriental piece. And I did the duet with him for the teacher's showcase. And it was there that another teacher named Gabby Sheba, who is a Lebanese, he's a dubbed to master, and he had a production company in Cairo in that time. He was working in Egypt, and he saw me dancing with Ihab and thought, hey, you know, do you want to come and work with my production company and do some gigs and do some duets, do some group dances, do some solos, you know, just do some work for these weddings and things. And I was like, sure. Yeah, that's cool. So, you know, I did a few gigs, and I met a lot of dancers who worked with him, like from the Rada troupe and other folklore groups, probably Kalmea too, but specifically the certain people that I know that I met then, exactly then, are still with Rada Troupe. And I've even danced with them in some of the plays, which is pretty cool. So it's a very, very small world. But through them, through these guys, they were like, oh, there's an audition for a video clip. Oh, there's an audition for a show in Luxor. There's an audition for this, for that. These guys, you know, that I met in the work with Gabby, they're the ones that always called me about other types of gigs. So the door opened for one thing, and then it's just like an explosion of gigs and things to do. And pretty much, you know, if you're a foreign girl who's a classically trained dancer who could also do, you know, Rakshaki, it was good for me because a lot of dancers who were belly dancers couldn't necessarily pick up choreography quickly. But, you know, my Bachelor of Fine Arts degree was in ballet, so I'm already a trained dancer, and I could do the lifts, and I could do the other stuff. So it was very good for me to be able to do other types of things, too. It made me more marketable. And so that's how it all happened. I got this job in Luxor in this show, and that was my first contract. And it turns out the choreographer of that show was Hassan Afifi, who had taught in New York City the year previously. I believe it was 2007. And I had seen him already at Nile Group that summer. And then 2 months later, he's in Luxor, you know, and I was, you know, I just came up to him and I was like, oh, hey. And he's like, oh, what are you doing here? It was really cool. I mean, it was the first time I really felt like I belonged, and I felt like I was part of something. And it really felt like, you know, I can't believe this is happening. How weird. A year ago, I was taking his class in New York. And now I'm here on the stage with him and he's setting a piece on us. Pretty
in
cool.
Cairo. How about that?
And that was in Luxor at that time.
Luxor. Yeah, you said that.
Mm-hmm, yeah. But you know, what's interesting about that too is like later, years later, a lot of the dancers that I worked with in Luxor, I still know, I still see in Cairo. They're either working at the Balloon Theater or they're doing plays and events and they're doing other types of things. And we run into each other all the time. And we always joke because every year we're like, oh, it's been 8 years. Oh, it's been 9 years. We're like, it's been a decade, you know, and it's funny, you know, I see their progression and what they're doing. Some of them were, you know, kind of baby dancers. And now they're, you know, in the Cairo Opera House and they're trainers. And so we've seen each other work really hard and become more successful in our field. And it's really incredible to watch your colleagues continue you know, to do what they're doing and stay in it. And that makes me so happy when I get to see people, you know, doing their best.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Great. Well, you've mentioned plays, of course, dance gigs. What other kinds of work, what all kinds of work are you doing over there?
Well, what I'm doing now mostly is freelance work in Cairo. So I work as a freelancer with different agents and managers, whoever I want to. I don't stay with just one person because when I was in, okay, so after Luxor, my partner Yasser and I, and we've been together for over a decade. And so it's like he's, you know, he's been very supportive and helpful in the work that I've done. I mean, of course, I have to do the work. Mm-hmm. Nobody can get the work for you, but he's been very helpful in the sense that he helps organize things. And he basically helped me. We ran this Egyptian folklore group together in Sharm el-Sheikh, and that was a wonderful experience. So what I did there, I'm not exactly doing that in Cairo now, although a lot of those dancers that worked with us, we're still in contact with, and we still hire freelance or we still work with them sometimes. But the work we did in Sharm el-Sheikh was we created an Egyptian folklore dance team. And then later, as the demand got larger and as we grew and became more well-known and got more contracts in the different hotels, we created an international dance show. So I had foreign girls who did belly dance or international dance, and some of them did Egyptian folklore. And then I had Egyptian dancers who did Finun Shabea, which is the Egyptian folklore group. And then we had Tenor dancers, and then we had belly dancers, some of which were Egyptian, some of which were foreign. And then we had about, you know, at certain times, at a time in Sharm, we had about 50 contracts in different hotels. So we worked 7 days a week.
50?
Wow. We worked, yes. I didn't sleep much.
I don't guess so.
I'm going to tell you, I mean, it was good. This was the biggest learning experience I've ever had in my life. I mean, New York was great. College was wonderful, gave me a degree. This was the real learning experience of just learning about the culture, learning about dealing with people, with managers, all types of personalities.
You had to make that company. You had to get all of the licensure and the paperwork and everything and make sure that you were on the up and up with all that too. I bet that was a challenge.
It was a rigmarole. It was a situation. And I'm telling you, like, right when I first got there, of course, you know, immediately you're a foreigner, you're the new kid on the block, you know, and I definitely had some haters, like, immediately. Somebody didn't like that I was going to be at this place and that the venue wanted me every day, and it was taking away from what this other group had. And they called the Nakaba. There's the Nakaba and the Musanafa. Basically, what they did is they called them to say, there's a foreigner dancing here at this time. And, you know, they were basically just trying to get me into trouble.
Oh,
and at that moment, we were starting to make the paper for Vanessa Show Productions, which would have been like an umbrella sort of company, so that for the hotels, we had permission to work in the hotels, but not in nightclubs, okay? Mm-hmm. So now this type of paper and how they did the system in Sharm is different than it is now, and it's very different than Cairo. But back then, there were some, they definitely had some exceptions, and there was some leeway. But because we were also going to do a folklore group, I got a lot of respect from these people because I was giving people a lot of work, and they liked the work that we were doing. Well, what happened is this person called them up and tried to make a problem for me, and they came, and they saw my show. And it was not what they were expecting. They came up to us afterwards and said, well, there's some people that certainly don't want you here, but you're a very good dancer. Your costuming is good. You're very respectful, and you deserve to be working. And they, right on the spot, said, we are going to make a special letter of permission until you're able to finalize your other paperwork to give you permission to work in these venues. Now, that doesn't exist now. I mean, basically what happened was kind of a miracle. And it was certainly just kind of like one of those things, like, oh, thank you, God. Like, somebody tried to mess me up, and then it's like I got rewarded somehow. You know, it's just crazy. But basically, that person tried to make a problem for me, and it put me more on the map with the people who had the say to say she works or she doesn't. Mm-hmm. And they're like, no, she works.
Wow. Well, so everything happens for a reason.
It does. And it's kind of weird, you know, but I really do feel like, you know, having the respect of people is super important, because at the end of the day, these guys, they still come and see my show. Like, when I'm performing at Nile Group, they come and sit at the table and they feel proud. Like, hey, remember her way back when? Remember her 10 years ago dancing at that place that they wanted to kick her out? They wanted to make a problem. I mean, the same guy that came to see the show, I literally just like 3 months ago saw him at the Nakaba Club, and he came up and shook my hand.
Oh, wow. Nice.
I know. But I mean, it makes you feel also like you're part of something, and people appreciate you, and they come up and they want to say hello. I mean, that to me is priceless.
Yeah.
You know,
10 years, right? 10, 11 years. How has it changed in all that time since you've been there?
It's been an incredible change. We could say before the revolution and after the revolution, but I don't even think it's really that. And some people could say the revolution changed all of it, and it's possible. I think social media also changed a lot of things. So when I got there, the music was different. The music that was popular was different. Mm-hmm. When you would see the local people dancing, they were dancing a certain way. So back then, you could say 2008, 2009, 2010-ish, there was still more of an oriental style. Even if a guy got up to dance, he was kind of dancing a little bit more oriental style. And if you wanted to show up the belly dancer, you know, I mean, it was just kind of funny, because they would do the hip drops, they would do shimmies, they would do certain steps, big hip circle and all that. Well, as Shaabi and Marganet and some of these other styles came to take the forefront a little bit, the steps became different. So the children who were born, who are growing up watching other types of video clips of different types of music, they're not doing the soft oriental style as much. It doesn't mean that it doesn't exist or that some of them aren't. I'm just saying the majority, you'll see girls dancing like boys. You'll see guys doing kind of vulgar stuff, or like just very, very freestyle kind of hip-hop-ish sort of moves. And you'll see girls doing that too. And so basically, if you're at a nightclub, or if you're at a disco or whatever, you'll see anyone who's 20 years old is dancing a certain way. Anyone who's like 35 and up is dancing a little bit different way.
Huh.
And it has to do with when they were born and what they're exposed to and what they listened to and how they grew up and what was around them.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting because, seriously, if somebody was just born in the year 2010 and now they're 9 years old, they're dancing a certain way. And it's not the same way the kids 10 years ago were dancing because it's evolved and it's changed. Now, to me, it's a little scary because, like, let's say we have ballet. We have classical ballet. Well, if you go to see the Nutcracker every year, it's about the same. I mean, you're gonna see classical ballet vocabulary. And just because hip-hop exists or tap or jazz or any musical theater, any other style of dance, ballet remains ballet. And the appreciation for it remains intact. And it continues to be taught in a certain way with a system. But it's not a folkloric dance. It's a classical dance.
Mm-hmm.
So the Egyptian dance is it's more organic and it's coming from the music. Now, people will say, oh, well, Umm Kulthum. Well, this music from Umm Kulthum was not made to dance on, by the way.
Yeah.
People sat there in a chair wearing formal clothing like they were going to the opera and listened to her. I mean, nobody would even sit and listen to anybody and sit down anymore. I mean, maybe you go to a concert, but people are on their phone taking pictures of themselves. I mean, they're not even sitting down paying attention. Even the audiences are different now. Like, you know, it used to be everybody was watching you and they're clapping. And now it's like, okay, what they'll do is they'll take a video of you. You don't even know if they're taking a selfie of themselves or they're taking a video of you. And then they're busy posting it. And they're watching your show. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. Or they're watching your show, but it's like they're too busy holding their phone. Like, it's very different. I mean, people do still show appreciation, but mm-hmm. it's a different sort of thing with everybody on their phone. Also with social media too, there's some people who are very, they hardly did anything, but they look like they're extremely famous and have done all this stuff, or they didn't do much, but they have a video that went viral and then all of a sudden, boom, they're famous. And then you have these super talented people. You know, it's just very different. And I hope that I'm not explaining, I mean, I hope I'm explaining it in a way that seems tangible, but
I think so.
Well,
yeah.
There's things in my mind, and I feel like a scrambled egg, so I'm trying to say it all. But I mean, the main point is that it's not just about the revolution. People can say, oh, well, there's all these problems, so that people got angry and they were making this music. It's like, no, I mean, music evolved in America too.
Yeah,
you know?
Everywhere. It's a living art form, you know.
It is, and it's breathing, and it's changing. So I also feel that social media has affected a lot of things too, because people are seeing what they're doing in other cultures and Western cultures, and then they're liking that, or they just want something new and different, and so they're saying, well, let's do this.
Yeah.
So I just hope that they can still appreciate the classics, and they can still appreciate certain things while also embracing the evolution of the new stuff, which is coming out, you know, and that would be wonderful. If they can just find that balance and do that, that would be great. It shouldn't be replaced. It just needs to be in addition to.
Yeah, I agree. And I think as teachers, we have a responsibility to continue exposing students to the classics, you know?
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, yeah. And when I first started dancing, I remember thinking, it was back in the day when the belly dance superstars were very big. Shakira was big. What's her name? Starts with an R. Not Rihanna. Was it Rihanna? I can't remember. Anyway, that was the big thing. And I remember going on to YouTube and watching some of the golden era dancers and thinking, you know, because I'd heard of them from other people, and I would watch and think, gosh, they're not moving very much. I don't really get it. It just doesn't seem like, I don't get it. And then it took years and live music to go back and see and understand what was happening and what they were doing. And
well, yes.
And now I appreciate it. I mean, it's been several years, but I do appreciate it. And I do expose my students to that and those videos and try to explain to them, okay, here's what you might be thinking. Here's what I want you to look for. Yeah?
Yes, you know what? You're so right, because I feel like sometimes, and it's just getting more and more out of hand because it's all about flash and show. And the thing is, it's great to have wow moments, but we shouldn't rely on just flinging our hair around the whole time or super, super overly, I mean, there's nothing wrong with sexy costumes. Okay. Look, I like a little leg. I mean, there's nothing wrong with, you know, costuming yourself in a respectful manner, but it is still sexy. You don't have to try to be sexy though, because you already are. But I think a lot of the movements now are just, you know, I remember Hassan Afifi telling me in New York at the show, and I remember I was working really hard for this number that I did there. And he told me, he goes, "You're a good dancer, but you need to calm down a little bit." He goes, "Sometimes it looks like you," he did. He pulled me aside and he goes, "Sometimes it looks like you're doing gymnastics out there. You need to calm down." And you know what's funny is I think that if he saw some of the stuff that's going on now, I mean, what I was doing was nothing compared to, you know, some of the really crazy looking, just everybody, it's like a competition to see who could do the craziest stuff. And to me, I'm like, well, that's not the rock sharky I fell in love with. I mean, that's not Egyptian dance or, you know, belly dance, really.
Yeah, and the thing it's an evolution.
Yeah, but here's the thing. There's nothing wrong with certain evolution, okay? There's nothing wrong with things becoming, I understand it is a very individual sort of thing, but because it's been individual, some people just take it as a free-for-all and they're like, oh, I could just, you know, do whatever the hell I want. And I feel like if you were doing karate, you have to follow the forms of the kata. If you're doing ballet, you have, you know, there's these positions and these certain types of things that you're going through. Certain things have a standardization and they have like, but what's hard is when it's based in something which is very organic, you know, it's kind of like we've been doing it backwards because we're trying to make a system for something where a system didn't really exist. Mm-hmm. But then in the same time, it's like, well, how do we keep the essence of what it is without losing it while we're trying to do, you know, pirouettes and kicks and tack, 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 you know? And sometimes I look at things and I'm like, this girl is gorgeous. She needs to be doing jazz dance. She needs to be doing contemporary, or, you know, call it a fusion piece, because there is nothing wrong. I love, do you know what? I come from another dance form. I come from other dance forms and backgrounds. Okay, I chose to do Egyptian style and Egyptian folklore in Egypt because that is what they were wanting. And do you know what? I could have done a cartwheel going into the splits, and they would have gone, oh, look at that stupid American coming over here thinking he could do our dance, and then look what she's doing. But now it seems like that's what some people are just like, well, this is my style, and this is what I'm doing. And it's kind of, to me, slightly disrespectful. It's like, kind of try to follow what it is you're calling it, what you're doing. And, you know, I mean, if you're making a dish, like if you're making a pie, are you going to put beef in it? I mean, maybe it's a beef pie, but yeah. I mean, I'm just saying, like, you know, keep the ingredients of the dish.
Right. I understand.
Don't make lasagna and, like, you know, throw a big, you know, chicken leg in it. I mean, it doesn't belong there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, evolution of things is sometimes interesting and painful to watch. Anyway.
Yeah, and then, you know, you can't say anything because then people think you're being a hater or you're being mean. But the way I see it is, you know, good is good. Stick to the form. There are certain things that we can do, within that form, within the vocabulary, absolutely. But then, you know, don't just go off on a tangent thinking that, you know, I mean, I don't care if you've been dancing for 8 years. What does that mean? What kind of accreditation does that give you? Or all of a sudden, well, you've been doing this. I mean, you see some people and they have this long resume, but I'm like, but have you really studied? Have you really done the work? That takes time and years and effort. And the idea of paying your dues, and seriously, I mean, I remember I just wanted to get gigs. I didn't care about dance history. I didn't care about folklore. I remember those days very, very clearly. I was one of those people. I just wanted to put on a pretty costume. And there's nothing wrong with that either. If you just want to, you know, I get it. But at a certain point, if you are going to be responsible for other dancers coming up, you need to know what you're talking about. And if you don't know, don't act like you know. Say, you know what, this is not my realm of specialty, but so-and-so really knows all about that. And refer your student to, hey, take a workshop, take a private lesson, ask so-and-so about, you know, this whatever topic it is that you're not, you know, don't act like you know it all and just give them an answer. It's not cool. Like, try to help promote the awareness and support other artists who also have knowledge and talent.
Right on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish I was sitting next to you because I'd say cheers, bitches. Yeah.
Okay. I have to ask you this. You mentioned the revolution and I wanted you, were you there when that was going on?
I was in Sharm El Sheikh. So, okay. I was in Egypt, but I was basically away from the problems. And to be honest with you, we felt it. Yes. We felt it very much in the sense that the business went down, but we didn't feel it in the sense of there's riots happening next to us. It was actually very calm where I was. And I remember my mother saying, oh, please, you know, just like have a suitcase ready in case you need to go. And I was like, okay, Mom, I promised her. I was like, so I made a suitcase, like my emergency escape suitcase. But this is the funny thing. So, okay, so I packed the suitcase. Now, first of all, in order to get to the States, I would either have to go to Europe and then fly, so to not go through Cairo, or I'd have to fly to Cairo, which is where everything was happening,
right,
and then fly from there. But I was like, okay, whatever, Mom, like I'll listen to you. I'll do what you say. So I make the suitcase. And basically, every day, I just start taking things out of the suitcase and wearing them. So then like a week later, my suitcase was empty, and I had worn all the clothes that were in my suitcase. I'm like, yeah, it's just not happening. And then I put my suitcase away. But I did. I tried. You know, I tried to do the little emergency suitcase situation, and I was like, this is silly.
Well, so, you did it. You just didn't keep it. That's all.
Yeah, exactly. But it was interesting because a lot of dancers in Cairo didn't find themselves having any work because it was just all going to hell in a handbasket, and mm-hmm. lots of them came to Sharm. And so I had a lot of dancers that had been, in fact, you know, some of the dancers were like, oh, Cairo is where the real work is, and Sharm El Sheikh is, you know, just, you know, when you need to do a gig or just for fun or it's not serious or whatever. And some of those people, they were like calling me on the phone. They're like, do you need anybody?
Right.
It was kind of funny. I was, oh, now we're good enough for you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But you know what? The Four Seasons is the Four Seasons, and their standard in Sharm El Sheikh is just as high as it is in Cairo. So, you know, where the places where we worked, you know, I mean, the work was the work. It just happened to be in a very, very beautiful place. But yeah, we felt it in the sense that, well, fortunately I was working in good hotels, so they still had clients, but some of the little hotels did close. So like some of the smaller businesses closed, some of the mm-hmm. folklore group, you know, they had trouble keeping work. We told anyone, hey, if you want to go home to your family, feel free to go. Like we were working more on a skeleton crew. I was living in like really nicer, like nice apartment. And I was like, oh, I got to get out of here. And like, I'm going to the cheaper rent place. Like, I don't care. Like, I'm just, you know, I mean, literally, like I made changes immediately to help save myself. I told right. everyone, you know, you've got a job, but we're working on a lesser salary because we're taking less money because we've got less work. Mm-hmm. You know, like we were working in some places 7 days a week, like at Four Seasons, we had maybe five shows a week. And then the band and the tux and the singers and we're working other days. And then they go, oh, we're just going to go to 2 days a week. One day, one day folklore show. And yeah, so you still have to have the people there. You don't want to like send everybody home and then you can't do the work. But yeah, the work dropped considerably. So I had huge overhead and less income. So it was pretty, let's just put it like this. There was some time where I was like eating a lot of eggs because eggs are cheap. If you ever get into a bind, just eat eggs. You'll be fine.
Okay, good to know.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. But so fast forward, I know that just recently, what was it about? Was it March that you did the play at the Balloon Theater?
Oh yes, the Bali Hamdi. Yes. So this, oh my goodness. So first of all, the director of this play, his name is Dr. Adil Abdu, and he is the chief of the Masraha Balloon, the chief of the Balloon Theater. So he just, in the last year, he was already directing and doing tons of things for the Ministry of Culture, but he became the head of the Balloon Theater, overseeing all of the productions and things which are coming out of it. So the Balloon Theater is a government-run theater and endorsed by the Ministry of Culture. Now, what's really cool is the actual Minister of Culture, Madame Inez, she's a woman, okay? Mm-hmm. The Minister of Culture in Egypt is a woman. And they actually have about 7 ministers who are women in Egypt, which is amazing. Wow. And I'm so proud. Yes, yes. So I've met a couple of them. But Inez, I had the opportunity to perform for her, which was really, really cool. But this play was directed by Dr. Adil Abdu. And we had a couple of stars, one of the star singers, Marwa Nagy. I'd worked with her a year and a half previously for the grand reopening of the Balloon Theater, which was called Beth El Fan, which is House of Arts. And that was also directed by Dr. Adil Abdu prior to his becoming the head of the Balloon Theater. So what I learned there in the theater is that a lot of people, it's all a very small world, and you need to do a good job because, you know, people are watching you. Sure. People are watching you. So I was just a little, you know, I was dancing in the other show, you know, as a ensemble, you know, with the ballet, you know, mm-hmm. duet, partnering, partner work, lifts. And turns out my dance partner, Sameh, actually danced. He's a wonderful dancer who's danced for years in various capacities in Cairo, but he actually danced with my group for a couple of years. And, you know, he's very, very clever and picks up choreography. He just has to watch something and he does it. I mean, it's amazing how these guys learn over there, because they really learn on the fly. I mean, they just pick it up. It's just a totally different way of absorbing the information. It's really interesting.
But, very visual, huh?
Yeah, very well. A lot of these guys, they don't have tons of formal training. It wasn't like they got to take a lot of ballet classes. They were just like, here, learn this, y'all, let's go. And like, seriously, even for video clip shooting, sometimes people will just be doing the dance in front of the camera and people are just following. Like, they barely learned it. They barely had a chance to learn it. Like, that kind of thing would like send me to tears, you know, if I was like 18, 19, 25, you know, I'd be like, oh, like you're at an audition. I had to learn how to learn things quickly,
yeah.
But this was ridiculous. But anyway, so I digress. So the point was that at Balloon Theater, what I learned is everybody talks about everyone. Everybody knows everyone. Everybody works with everyone. So they're watching you. So you've got to be nice, do a good job. And, you know, and then, you know, inshallah, the next time you get a little more or you know, they see you doing something. So how it all happened is Dr. Adil Abdu had worked with me before, so he knew what I could do. And he had wanted me to be part of this production, but I was traveling. I was traveling to the States because I had workshops and things to teach and to do. And so I had started rehearsing with them, but then I had to leave because I already had my contract. And I was like, I'm really sorry, but I've got to go. Yeah. And this is the second time something like this would happen.
Did it go longer than it was supposed to? Is that why you started and weren't able to...
No, I had to leave before it opened. We were in rehearsals and it hadn't opened yet because they were running late. They always run late.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You know, they always say inshallah will open. They were supposed to open at the beginning of December and they're like, inshallah, the middle of December, inshallah, the end of December. And then, you know, it was just like, okay, well now I'm going.
Yeah.
So I felt horrible, but it was like, okay, well, you know, I did the rehearsals and stuff. And then it was like, they hadn't opened yet. I'm like, well, I've got these things. So when I come back, if you guys are still working and you want to put me back in, you know, I can do it. I mean, it was like, what can I do? Like, so how it all worked out in the end is he had given me a speaking part, which I had to do in French. And I don't speak French, by the way. So that was an interesting little endeavor. See, this is what I've learned also. Just say yes, because I could be like, no, I don't speak French, but I have a friend who's French. She can coach me. It's just a few little lines. So here I am, an American girl in Cairo speaking French. I mean, it was just silly, but
say yes. You know, I love it.
just say, okay. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, most of the Egyptians, their French isn't perfect either. I mean, some of them really do speak French because they went to the French school, but you know, hey, it's you know, it might not be much worse than my Arabic. So why not? Give it a whirl.
Yeah.
So I learned the stuff phonetically through my friend who coached me, who is French. So she gave me very good pronunciation. Anyway, I do all of that. And then I'm, you know, dancing some solo for Alf Leila Walela. And so what he did is he ended up having the stage manager, one of the stage manager girls, she took over my French lines. And then for my part, which was the solo part, he just didn't put anyone in there. He just let the boys and girls do their part. And then literally he just popped me right back in to my part when I got, like, he just said, when she arrives back, just, you know, have her let us know. And I did a rehearsal backstage with the boys and girls, so they know, like, hey, let's try not to have any collisions on the stage. I didn't even get a dress rehearsal because they were already running. It was literally like the curtains back here. Just let them know, okay, I'll do my best. I see you're doing this grand jeté here. I'll try to be here so you guys don't kick me, and then I'll move back. And I mean, it was really like the first day I was like, oh, you know, like, am I going to get whacked in the head? Like, you know, we made it. And, you know, and so it was really fun to get to go back into that production, and then it got extended. So, you know, we had a lot of days of performance, and it was wonderful. And how it was in that particular production, this was none of the dancing was Rock Sharkey. None of the dancing was Oriental dancing. He was using the songs of Billy Tandy, but he was having the boys and girls do more kind of modern and balletic sort of vocabulary and movement. So I was dancing Alf Leila, and every song was sung by a singer. Every song had a singer. But Alf Leila was the only song which was done as the orchestration only, with no words. So I was the soloist. Instead of there being a singer singing the song, I was the soloist with the ensemble of the group.
Very cool.
Which was amazing. And so how it all happened was I didn't even know what costumes the boys and girls had. So I had two costumes that were very, very covered. You know, literally from neck to toe, I had like a solo bit, which is it means like a unitard sort of thing with the mesh. And I was wearing beige shorts, you know, like long, like everything in the folk, in the balloon theater, you have to be able to say the Minister of Culture is there, ambassadors, other people are there visiting. You have to be respectful and covered. Even the Raider troop, you know, what the girls are wearing, it's more covered in their costuming. So if I was doing anything with any Oriental, I had to especially be very aware and careful to make sure that I didn't, you know, offend or, you know, anything like that. So I had one beautiful costume that was like a beige and gold, and I had like the leggings, you know, with rhinestones on it. And then I had a really beautiful Iman Zeki costume, red, with, you know, I had mesh inserts put into it so that it was completely covered and everything. And that worked out really well. But what I saw what the boys and girls were wearing, it turns out they were wearing the colors of the Egyptian flag. They were wearing red, white, and black. And the girls were wearing pants. I thought they would be wearing dresses, but they were literally wearing, it kind of looked like a tuxedo sort of thing, and they were wearing black pants. And I thought, okay, you know what? I've got like a black unitard that Iman did for me with like rhinestones on it. And I thought, oh, I've got this mesh top. You know, so basically I created this outfit from costume pieces that I had that looked a little bit more kind of what it was that they were wearing. And then all of a sudden, since I was wearing pants, I was like, well, I could do pirouettes. I could do the fouette turns at the beginning that the boy was doing that he wanted me to do already. I can do all this other stuff now that they're doing that's similar to their vocabulary that I couldn't do before in the dress.
Right.
So the director was loving it because he's like, well, now you're really mixing the Oriental with the ballet vocabulary. So I got to do, and he pretty much let me do whatever I wanted. He allowed me to improvise. I mean, I did a set, like I kind of created a choreography from that, but he let me take the vocabulary of what he had given the boys and girls to do. And then I made my part based around their vocabulary and my vocabulary. And I felt so honored that he gave me the freedom to do that on that stage.
That's amazing.
You know, because who knows if I'll ever have that again. You know, I may never have that again. know, because they like to micromanage you. But it was wonderful to have that, to have that experience.
Mm-hmm. Cool beans. That's an interesting story. Thanks for sharing that with us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so you've been there for a little while. Is there anything that you wish you knew, that you know now, that you wish you'd known then?
Well, there's tons of things I know now that I didn't know then. Ha ha ha.
Well, of course. But if there's something, is there something that you know now that you wish you knew then that would have made it a whole lot easier to do whatever?
Okay.
Make the production company, I don't know, something.
Let me put it like this. If myself now could go back in time, I would say, because the thing is, you know, these experiences, I almost feel like even the bad things that happen helped me.
Yeah.
So I would just tell myself, don't expect things to run on U.S. time because they're not. Don't get frustrated because, you know, don't. You know, I mean, I didn't throw in the towel, but there was a couple times where I almost did because it was just so frustrating. I would tell myself, listen, just keep going, but understand that a lot of people out there, they're not always going to be able to tell you the truth or to put it straight. So just know how to read between the lines, know how to read people, understand that things are going to take time. And also, you can't take it personally. There's tons of people that are super talented and they don't get the opportunity. They just don't, for whatever reason. It doesn't mean you're not good. So, you know, don't let other people's vision of you affect how it is you feel about yourself. You know, because at the end of the day, you could say, oh, you know, I have this dream to work in Egypt, but, you know, sometimes at what cost? Like, to be honest with you, if I went there right now, if I went there today and I hadn't had the experiences that I've had now in all of these years and I just showed up, I'd probably be like, what the hell is this? I don't want to be dancing here or there. Or I don't like, I wouldn't like what it is. And I'm not saying it's all bad, but it's different. And it's not really the scene that I would be loving. Like, for example, some of the venues now, they have the girls dancing on the bar. Well, I'm not going to poo-poo the girls that do that if that, mm-hmm. That's what the venue wants. But you're not really going to find me up there.
Yeah.
I'm just, it's not what I want to do. Even 10 years ago, I probably would have gone, But, you know, I did it once at a New Year's party, and it was the last party of the night. I thought, to heck with it. It's New Year's. But you know what? I mean, it's not where I'd be going every week. I need a stage.
Yes.
You know, I need to dance on a stage. I'm not dancing on a bar. But again, I'm not sitting here trying to poo-poo anybody. But
right on.
The thing is, what I would say is, it's never going to be what you expect. So you need to, like, not hold on to what it is you think it's supposed to be, because it's not that anyway. Really pay attention to what people are saying to you, because, you know, sometimes we just hear the things we want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
So be very kind of aware of how things are going, and then be true to yourself. If something doesn't feel good, or you don't like it, or it's not what you believe to be right for yourself, Don't compromise your integrity for anybody or anything, because it's just not worth it.
No.
You know, and I don't feel that I did that, but there was a lot of times where I found myself going, and I, you know, I'm the hard one. I think I'm the one a lot of people go, oh, because, you know, I stand up for myself. And I, when I had a group, I stood up for my people. You know, I would. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'd be like, the girls, they can just change in the bathroom. And I'm like, there's a backstage area. You're going to need to unlock that and have it ready for us next week, or we're not going to be here. You know, like, you know, they just kind of would treat you like, you know, any other group. They thought they could just do whatever. And I really had to stand up. So, yeah, I would just say, understand that things are going to happen in their own time. You can't plan anything, because anything that you plan, it's not going to go that way. And you just have to be ready. You have to expect the unexpected. You have to have a plan A, B, C, D, and E. And be true to yourself. And if something doesn't feel right, you know, stand up for it. Mm-hmm. Stand up for yourself and don't get pushed around.
Right on. Good advice. I think you might have covered it. I have another prompt here for myself to ask you if you had anything to add to advice that you would give to dancers considering a career or work in Egypt? Anything to add to that? Yeah.
Yes. What I would say is, because I went over there expecting to have an experience. I went over there saying, if I get work, great. If I don't, I'm going to have an incredible experience. I would first not try to focus on get work, get work, get work. Because you know what? You can get work. You can get illegal work immediately. You can find a whole plethora of guys that will be very, very happy to take a cut of your money and make you work in all kinds of places. So it's not hard to get work, any work, in any circumstance. What it is hard to do is to get good venues and to get the right sort of rates and to get into the kind of work that is not cutting down and breaking the market. Mm-hmm. So don't go there with the idea of, I'm going to get work. I'm going to get work. Go there for the idea of the experience of learning what it is, and then go and do your homework. Go, and maybe your first trip isn't going to be the trip where you're going to get the work. It's going to be the trip where you see what is happening. Who is where and why? What are they offering? What is going on? You know, get a real gist of the situation at hand. Don't just go and say, oh, so-and-so wants me to work on a boat. I mean, it's for free, but who cares? I'll get a video and I'll post it. And now I can tell everybody I'm working in Egypt. I mean, do you see what I mean? There's a lot of people. I understand it's an experience and people want to have that experience. I get it. I understand. But some people are so over-enthusiastic that they end up destroying what other people have worked so very hard to get.
Yeah.
And when we fight to have the rates and we fight to just, you know, have things be, it's not even fair. I mean, to me, it's, you know, I feel like we deserve more, but when they know that people will do it for less, this is when it starts to become, so if you give them an inch, they'll take a mile. So don't be too desperate. Don't be too overzealous. And be aware of those other people. You know, when I went to New York, it was the same thing. Maybe I stepped on a few toes, but I really did try to go through the right channels, you know, and I had to learn a few hard lessons, you know, and I think that sometimes people, they just go somewhere and they don't care. They just don't care about what they're doing. They don't care about the mess they make, and they don't care about, what they do in their time there. They just want what they want. They want their videos. They want the experience. They want the pictures. They want the exposure and all of that. But they're not thinking about how that affects everyone who's been there and is dealing with the whirlwind of basically Cairo turning into a bus stop.
Well, I want to expand on that just a little bit. I'm sure that probably happens fairly often, but do you think also that it might be that they go thinking, well, I'm going to go and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do it, you know, for free or whatever, because if I do this thing, then there'll be more and it'll be paid then, you know? Do you think that some of it?
Well, maybe. I mean, I can't understand how somebody would do that, because to be honest with you, you can do an audition somewhere, okay? And it could be in the daytime, or it could be a paid audition, or, you know what I mean? Or you're doing, or say it's somebody else's show and they've invited you and you do a song. I mean, that's okay. You did a song to be seen. That's an audition. But work is work. Mm-hmm. And other people get paid to do that work.
Right. So, I totally agree.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's just kind of like, I don't really know what goes on in the minds of people. But, you know, I think some people, they just would rather have the recognition than, you know, caring about the integrity of the entire thing. Now, that doesn't really, and to be honest with you, most of that stuff doesn't really affect me now. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you, even when I had a group, we were always asking for more money and we would take it. And some groups were very happy, even though they didn't like the fact that we came in and took tons of work, we drove the prices up.
Yeah.
So then they would come and they would undercut us and they would still be taking more than they used to take.
Wow. That's unfortunate.
You know, yeah. But anyway, I mean, you know, like I said, it's always going to be like that till the end of time. But I just feel that, you know, if the dancers had a little bit more respect for, you know, the overall thing, then they could try to keep a semblance of that. Now, again, this doesn't really affect me now, but it is something which is happening because it's kind of all over the place right now. And you see all kinds of things going on. And a lot of it has nothing to do with me or any of the places where I work. And I'm just like, all I could do is people say, ooh, what about this? And what about this? You know, there's a lot of videos of people doing crazy things, and those videos go viral. Yeah. And there's a lot of girls doing amazing dancing, really good stuff, and nobody cares. So, you know, there you go. You know, I think what we need to do is promote the good things and share the stuff that we believe in. And that's how we can support the arts and support each other in a positive way.
Right on. All right. Well, this is, you shared a lot of really great stuff with us, and I'm sure that everybody is happy to have heard all of this, and we thank you for sharing it. I want to do one more thing before we go to Q&As. The lightning round of your favorite things. And this is just a quick thing to, you know, kind of get into the mind of Vanessa. So I'll read them off, and you just tell me the first thing that comes to your mind in each one of these things, okay?
Okay,
what's your favorite book?
Harry Potter.
What's your favorite food?
Mexican food.
Favorite base color?
Favorite base color, black.
Yeah. What's your favorite splash color?
Hot pink or turquoise.
Favorite day of the week?
Any day I get to dance.
Woo!
Yeah.
Who's your favorite poet?
Dr. Seuss.
Yes.
Or my grandmother. Yes. I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them.
Do you have a favorite composer?
Oh my goodness. Well, it kind of depends on what kind of music we're talking about, but
whatever comes to mind.
I mean, I just thought Tchaikovsky, but that's so funny because we were talking about the Nutcracker, but
Tchaikovsky, I mean, is good. Like,
yeah, but you know what's funny is we were also talking about Balik Hamdi, and all of his songs are like my jam. So I'll just say both of those.
Okay. What's your favorite accent when you hear people speaking?
An Egyptian accent, of course.
Oh, favorite juice?
Mango.
Favorite behavior?
Behavior? Well, I guess I shouldn't say bad behavior. But, it depends on what kind of bad we're talking about. But, you know, I like kind of sassy. Like, I like a kind of flirty, sassy behavior.
Right on. And do you have a favorite instrument?
My mother forced me to play the piano as a child. So even though it's not really my favorite instrument, I'm really glad that I learned to play it. But I would say now my favorite instrument is the fagot.
Oh, yeah. All right. Excellent. Okay. Okay, before we get to the questions and answers, if people take just one thing away from this call, what would that be?
It would be... Well, what my dad always told me was, if at first you don't succeed, try again. And I would say that that's it, because at the end of the day, we don't just get things handed to us. You know, we have to work for it. And sometimes we feel like we get discouraged or things aren't going a certain way. You know, I was never going to make it as a ballet dancer in a ballet company. I might have the training, but I didn't have the right body type. Even, you know, I teach ballet. It was good for me, and I can help others. But, you know, sometimes we don't have certain things in a certain capacity, but that's okay. We do have a purpose, and we do have a place. And sometimes you just have to see where that is. And we don't always get everything we want, but also we can get certain things we never would have imagined if we keep going. There was a really great quote that I read once, which is, something similar, I may mess it up, but it was something like, you don't have to be great to start, but you have to start to be great.
That's right. Great quote. Very good. Okay. I think we're ready for some questions and answers. If you have a chat box and you want to type a question in there, that's a way to do it. If you're on the phone, you can press *9 and that will raise your hand and I can unmute you. If anybody's got questions, go ahead and do one of those things for us. And I'll start off with a question that I found on one of the Facebook groups, I can't remember, I think it was Belly Dance Matters and Facebook, Liz wrote that she was studying Arabic hand gestures used in Sha'abi dance, and she wants to know if there's a cultural meaning to the hand gesture that dancers will do when they cup their hands together and kind of point their fingers downward, like when they're doing hip accents. Can you tell us about that, Vanessa?
Do you know what that means? I think I know what you mean, but I'd have to say, I mean, first of all, there's a certain way that you hold your hand if you're going to do like one of those kind of snaps.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's certain things that are certainly, like there's certain gestures that are not good, like vulgar. Like, for example, if you put the middle finger kind of going up and you kind of wag it back and forth, like that's the same thing as flipping somebody off. So there's certain things that sometimes, like, you could hold your hand a certain way and it might not look good. But I think that particular one, it could be, I don't usually see, like, if you're just going to be somewhere watching men or women just dancing, they're not necessarily making that gesture. Mm-hmm. So much, but it's kind of an older, it's to me, it kind of reminds me of an older style. Like, it seems like it's a little bit more of a kind of stylized thing from like an older sort of style, which now people are putting, like you see choreographers putting that gesture back into their choreographies and movements. So I don't want to say it's super cultural. It's certainly not shabby oriented. I mean, if anything, it looks like it's a more of an older style where people are kind of revisiting certain places where the hand can go. And if it's the one that I think I've seen some choreographers, like for example, maybe Mohammed Shaheen and some other choreographers, they do some really fun hand gestures which are going with Egyptian style. And if that's what it is, if it's the one that you're referring to, I do believe that it's coming from a cultural place, but not necessarily like normal people in the street. It's just coming from like a dance culture sort of vocabulary. I hope that answers it a little bit.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, I think it'll give some kind of an idea, a little insight into it. So, but it's not generally a specific meaning or of hand gesture
I don't think it means anything. No, I don't think that means anything. I mean, there's certain things like, you know, your thumb is a knife. The guys use that even in Scandirani when they're doing folklore. Like your thumb is out and that's like, you know, your fist is in like your palm is like closed, like a fist, and your thumb is out. That's like a knife. I mean, that's something specific. But that is not, it doesn't have a meaning, I don't believe. It's just a gesture.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for that.
Sure.
Oh, okay. Sophia's got her hand up. Let me see if I can figure out how to make this work. Unmute. Okay, go ahead, Sophia.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah. Vanessa, can you hear her?
Absolutely. Hello.
Hi. I met you before. Remember when you came to New York to do the workshop with Natalie Nazario? I don't know if you remember.
Oh, cool.
I was actually
one
of the participants. I'm with her dance company.
Awesome. Hello.
Hello, hello. I was just wondering, you must have some stories of just the kind of getting through bureaucracy or like paperwork. Do you have some like funny memories or maybe frustrating memories of trying to get some paperwork pushed through or something, you know, to, I guess, get legitimate over there?
Well, it's kind of funny because I've got tons of stories, but nothing really super funny, except for there's this building called the Mogama, okay? And if anyone has ever done their papers, you know what the Mogama is. It's like, I mean, even if you haven't done your papers, but you're just trying to renew a visa or extend your visa or do anything, it's just like the worst. It's the worst. The worst!
Worst the than DMV.
It's just like, okay, so one time I was, it was worse than what?
Worse than DMV?
Yes. Yes, it is. And it's a little bit smelly. So, yeah, it's pretty bad. It's like the DMV, only worse. So, anyway, I was there one time in Ramadan. Now, first of all, these people are fasting. They're not in a good mood. Nobody is in a good mood. Everybody's thirsty. Everybody's hungry. I'm being, you know, pushed around, go to this window, go to that window. Nobody wants to help. Nobody's smiling. Everyone's just like trying to, for the, you know, waiting for the sun to go down. Anyway, I was so thirsty. I had to go. I was like embarrassed to drink water in front of anyone. I always have water in my purse. Anyway, I had to go into the bathroom, which I thought I'd probably catch like some sort of, you know, like Lord knows. I mean, you know, you're just trying not to like touch anything. I had to go and drink water in the stall of that bathroom. At the Mogama. I'll never forget that Ramadan in the Mogama, drinking water in the disgusting bathroom stall. It was so that I don't drink water and be disrespectful in front of the people. But like the stories that I have, most of them about stuff like that. I mean, the police getting called on me while I was dancing on the stage to get me in trouble, like the you know, I mean, that was a story. I mean, that was like, to me, that one took the cake because I was like, oh, nice. Now they're coming up and they're like wanting to see my passport. And they're, you know, I mean, that was pretty bad. But other stories, I had somebody pull a snake out of their jacket pocket on stage at a nightclub once. At first I thought it was a fake snake. So I started laughing and then it wasn't. I thought the guy was going to tip me. I thought he was reaching into his pocket to, like, tip me. And there's a snake. So, I mean, I've got some crazy stories, but most of them aren't, like, the ones that had to do with, like, dealing with bureaucracy, those aren't even, like, those are actually things I tried to forget. Like, I don't even have a good story.
That's valid. Nobody wants to remember paperwork anyway.
I'll tell you something. Every year you have to renew your papers and every year you have to go and you got to do all this stuff. Now, the cool thing is, you know, you start to go there enough and the people remember you and they know you. And it's funny, like I would see somebody, I'm like, oh, I was like, oh, you guys, you painted the wall. I was like, you used to have this. Oh, you guys removed the red couch. And anyone who knows who's been to the Musana spot, they know there was this ugly, horrible, burgundy, kind of red leatherish couch that we always had to sit on. I thought, how many people have sat on this couch? But anyway, finally, this year, it was gone. And there was chairs. I was like, what happened to the couch? You know, and they were all laughing. I was like, what? This was our couch. What did you do with it? You know, so, you know, you start to become friendly with the people. And, you know, I'm just glad, you know, I just try to get in and out of there. And, you know, it's like, you know, I'm not a morning person, but yeah, you know, it's one of those things. You just got to deal with it. It's just one of those things you just have to deal with.
So the once a year thing you're talking about, is that the visa?
The once a year, you have to renew the Musana Fight and the Mikaba. Every year you have to pay your dues. You have to go in. They can always deny you, you know, they can always deny you. But once you're in the system and you've had your paper and you continue to have the proper paperwork, you renew it and they renew it and you pay your thing and that's how it goes. So, yeah, it's one of those things. Some people have a contract through a hotel. Some people have a contract through a boat. Some people have a contract through a company. It's all different. So, but yeah, it's every year, no matter who you are. Even if you're Egyptian, you still have to go in and renew your license and your paperwork. So, yeah, everybody's got to do it. And sometimes we see each other, I'll run into people, we'll be like, oh, yeah. And you've got a little bit of a grace period. Usually it's the first couple of weeks. I start to do it before the new year so that on New Year's, if people want to cause problems for you, you've already got the receipt that you started your paperwork for the following year. But you can't really finish it before the year is done. So then the next like 3-4 days of 2020, it'll be like a cesspool of like all these people like coming out of the woodwork to renew their stuff. So yeah, it's a situation, but you know, it's how it goes.
And everybody does it at the same time every year?
Well, if you wait till February, then you've gone a month and a half with no paper. So
no, but I mean it's all due on January at the beginning of the year for everybody.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So it's so like say if it took them 6 months to get your papers in order because you started as you came and you got everything set up, you're gonna have it. It's gonna expire at a certain time. So when people are like, oh, I'm getting my papers in order, like most of the time, there's tons of people who don't have that, and that's fine. I mean, whatever. But the point is that you're never gonna be like, oh, my papers go. I got them in June, so they go through June. Nope. Six fires for the year. Your contract with the hotel might not. Your contract might continue for however long, but you still have to get a new paper every new year. So that's how that goes. Yeah. Thank you, Sonia. And I hope I see you in New York. I'm going to be passing through. And next year, I'm also going to be in Connecticut. So maybe I'll see you then.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much for calling. And please send Natalie my regards.
Will do. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Sophia. Do we have any more questions? Anybody else? Going once, going twice. Sold on no more questions at this time. All right.
Well, so, we did talk about a lot of things.
Yes, we did. We did. It was really, really good. Don't run off, Vanessa. I want to thank everybody for coming. This is the end of the call, but the conversation isn't over. We have the private Facebook group for the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse, and shortly you'll get an email with an invitation to join that group if you're not already in it. And it'll also include the call recording, a link to resources that Vanessa mentioned in the call, and a survey asking for feedback for topics, speakers, improvements, anything that I can do better to make this a better experience for you. And I also want to let you know that the next call is coming up on Thursday, October 29th at 2 p.m. Pacific. And we're going to have Dawn Devine, or Davina, on how to think like a designer when shopping for or making costumes. And lastly, this clubhouse is the come on in kind of clubhouse. It's not the no boys allowed. So if you know somebody that would be interested, please invite them to join us at bellydancegeek.com/clubhouse. And until next time, happy dancing.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse. For more geektacular resources, visit us at bellydancegeek.com.